Good morning, and welcome to another episode of Here's What I Think, musings from two Anabaptist pastors, educators, and Christ followers. My name's Jeremy Miller.
And I'm Matt Showalter. Today, Jeremy, we're talking about something that, I don't know, it's been, I've been thinking about it a lot recently, and as we talked about it, I realize you've been thinking about it a lot recently, so we thought, well, shoot, let's do an episode on this and see where it goes. We came across a piece that was some notes from a talk that Henry Nouwen gave on the spirituality of waiting. Henry Nouwen, someone who has, he's a Catholic priest who's actually done, he's done a lot of writing on the topic of Christian spirituality and spiritual formation and some things like that. One of his books that I came across, boy, I don't know how many years ago it was now, called The Return of the Prodigal, I just recommend. It's some really neat reflections on the story of the prodigal son, and he really digs in deep with a lot of the implications of that particular parable that Jesus tells. And anyway, so a lot of some of the thoughts and stuff that we'll be talking about today kind of come from Henry Nouwen as far as that's concerned. But we're talking about the spirituality of waiting and the importance of sort of seeing this, seeing waiting not as passivity, apathy, sitting in your hands and doing nothing, but the importance as Christ followers of understanding there is a spiritual dimension to what it means to wait.
An intensely spiritual dimension.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of the thing that turned me onto this, Matt, has been a recent conversation with my sister. And I was expressing some frustration, which I may talk about a little bit later. But anyway, over the phone, she's just like, Jeremy, I've been reading this stuff about waiting from Henry Nouwen, and I think this might be a time of waiting for you, and it's okay. And we talked about that for a while, and I didn't actually want to hear it at the time, but I think she's right. Yeah.
Well, why don't you reflect on why you didn't want to hear it at the time? Like, what is it that, because I think I know for myself what it is, but what is it about someone saying, well, this is a time of waiting for you that makes you go, well that's not right?
Yeah, well, Matt, some of us are cursed with, well, maybe it's not a curse, but we are just built for action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we want to be moving and shaping and organizing and, if we're honest, controlling. Because we want to do stuff and we want to see stuff built in the world. And we tell ourselves we want to serve people. I hope that's true. Sometimes you don't even know the motivations of your own heart. But we want to serve God and you want to be on the move. And, you know, we're in the midst of this coronavirus period of time in which so much of our control has been stripped from us. And so much of our ability to control our environment, so much of our ability to affect our environment, to have the normal inputs, the normal patterns that allow us to do the things we want to do, like that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're in a place of leadership, like we are, I find there's a certain grief that comes with that. It's like, Lord, I can't do the things that I have felt called to do. I can't impact the college or impact our students or our staff or even my own family in ways that I had been accustomed to. And there's just kind of a removal, mm-hmm, of all kinds of stuff. And I found myself angry and sad and all these emotions I didn't really want to deal with.
Yeah, I was reflecting with someone just the other day about kind of what a normal sort of April was like for me. And I realized, you know, I've always loved spring semester here at RBC. The students all know each other. There's just a lot of activity, stuff happening. There's a constant sort of hum of all sorts of things going on.
The trees are greening up. It's
exactly
gorgeous.
All of a sudden, students are, you know, running outside, and there's always a game of, you know, I don't know, ultimate frisbee or something happening outside, and there's just stuff going on, and now all of a sudden there's not.
Yeah.
And for me too, it's been sort of a jarring time to sit back and, okay, what's now sort of my purpose
right.
when there isn't these things, when there aren't these things to do?
Yeah. And I think one of the harsh realities that I'm, again, faced with, because this stuff, if you're honest, it doesn't let you lie. We're really good at telling ourselves stuff we want to believe. At least I am.
Yeah. No, I am too.
But to deal honestly with ourselves and these situations really brings some things into a harsh light at times. But I realize so much of my identity is built on what I can do mm-hmm. and what I can control and what I'm contributing. And there is something wrong spiritually and unhealthy spiritually when our identity is built on that and not on what God is doing and has done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty central to the gospel.
And Henry Nouwen actually talks about that at one point in these in this article here, where he reflects on a bedside meeting that he had with someone who's dying of cancer.
Yeah.
And this person was sort of trying to get healthy, but the reason they were is so that they could get back to do the things they had been doing.
Yeah.
So as long as they were sick and couldn't do and be and do the things that they found their identity doing, all of a sudden they didn't have an identity. And he realized that it was hard for him to even know how to help this person because they were going to be dying soon. It wasn't like they were going to be able to get back to how they had, you know, to doing things, to sort of gaining some value from that. And he just noted that the spirit of this particular person was dependent on how much they could do.
Yeah.
And noting that that's a trap, really, that many of us fall into,
yeah.
is that we find our self-worth in how much or what we can do.
What we can accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it slowly erodes our vision for what God is doing in the world. Because we're not waiting on God. We're acting mm-hmm. and moving. And there is something right about action and movement. That is spiritual as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I've got an 18-year-old at home, a 16-year-old at home. And initiative is something that I want to see in them. Like, I don't want to see sort of apathy and passivity.
That's
and,
right.
Oh, whatever, I don't really care. No, I want to see drive.
Yeah.
I want to see initiative. I want to see action.
Yeah.
So that's where it kind of gets difficult.
But when we fail to remember that we actually aren't in control and that our lives are to be centered on the movement of God in the world. That as Christians, as followers of Jesus, we're watching first for what God's doing
mm-hmm.
and then to see how we might join him in that. And sometimes there's a waiting. I think about Henry Nouwen pointed out in this talk about the arrival of Christ was filled with people who were waiting. You know, Mary's waiting 9 months, she's got this baby for this promise to take part. Elizabeth, the same way. There's this waiting. And it's not that God's not doing something, but it didn't require Mary to be building and moving and shaking and for God's action to be complete. It was her call was to wait.
And there was really nothing she could do.
Right.
If she had wanted to do something.
Yeah.
And the same is true for Simeon and Anna and
right,
some of these other.
Right.
He points that out in his talk as well, that their lives were spent in waiting, but it wasn't a sort of a passive waiting. It wasn't an apathetic waiting.
No, there was yeah.
There was action. There was, but so is it more of an inward discipline then, an inward sort of knowing? Is that what we're talking about?
So. You know, this stuff is still so fresh with me because this coronavirus thing, I just found myself angsty and sometimes angry and even lashing out. I don't like any of that stuff. And I realize it's sort of an internal grieving process, loss of control. But ultimately, too, it was a forgetting of who I am in Christ as someone who can trust Christ with the things that are not in control, that I'm not in control of. Right? So when I reclaim that, when I reclaim that place of having my heart trusting God in the midst of situations I can't control, there is a certain peace and ability to wait with hope, knowing that God is in control. I'm not, certainly, at this point.
Yeah.
But God is. And my goodness, the joy of my salvation is in knowing that. That whatever else fails around me, the King of the universe will not fail. And he is in control. And there is a certain hope and joy, a profound hope and joy, when we're able to reclaim that spot and rest and wait for the deliverance of God.
Mm-hmm. One of the things in this talk that Henry Nouwen gives is sort of walk through the, and I guess this is fitting, just this past Sunday was Easter, but Henry Nouwen sort of talks about the passion of Jesus and his giving himself up on the cross and showing how so much of what he did, yes, it was action oriented. Yes, he did these things, but actually he didn't do them. They were done to him.
Yeah.
And he was simply faithful in dealing with what came to him.
Right.
In the way that we look at now and are just grateful.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I think, again, when we're honest with ourselves, most of life, not most, maybe most, I don't know, a lot of life is our response in how we're responding to the things that come to us.
That we can't control.
We can't control so much.
Yeah.
But we've come to believe we can control an awful lot. And there are a lot of things we can, but...
Well, yeah, as I was looking at these notes, that my own sort of kids kept coming to mind. You know, when they were younger, I felt like I could control them more and I could sort of set parameters and, you know, sort of control. But the older they get now, it's kind of a sad realization when one day you wake up and realize I can't really control my kids.
Right.
Like, but that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't want to have to control my kids all their lives. I want them to walk with Jesus and make good choices and make good things without sort of me helicoptering over them.
Yeah. The thing I've been thinking about with this whole thing is kind of the personal walk with Jesus that giving up control allows us to experience this more restful position with God, more trusting position with God. But there's also something profound in the way we relate to other people, in the way we disciple other people, when we give up this control and realize that God is at work in ways we don't see, where we don't have control, and when we've done all that we are to do, then the job is to wait for God to move. Again, wait for the deliverance of God. And so I think there's a real key aspect of discipleship that involves waiting.
You're absolutely right. I've fallen into that trap countless times in terms of the ways that I think, tried to enact change in people or maybe even in my own life, that, you know, I'm going to do this, and if only this person would take my advice and do what I tell them they should do, then everything would go okay.
Preach, brother.
But really, it's my call to love and to serve and to be a servant. And I don't know, I think I've fallen into the trap of playing the Holy Spirit in people's lives at times. And really, it's more about me wanting to control the situation than really about loving and serving them.
Yeah. That's such a hard truth, because what I find, again, man, when you're, it's painful sometimes to stare at your heart as it truly is. But you think about how the sins of others reflect negatively on you or your organization that you serve or, you know, the family you're a part of. And I think God is inviting us to let go of some of those vanities and realize that the King of the universe stepped down and identified with all kinds of people that don't reflect well on him, myself included.
So what are we saying then, Jeremy? Are we saying that this whole mentality of action, of initiative, of drive, of doing something, of kind of a get-it-done attitude is a bad thing?
Shortly after my conversation with my sister, in which I was bemoaning my grief and anger, and she's just like, you need to wait. Shortly after that conversation, I actually had my mom called me. I don't think they colluded, but...
Ooh, they were probably texting in the background.
That's right. You need to talk to Jeremy, man.
He's about to lose it.
But no, my mom called. And I don't think they had. And I shared with her a little bit of just some of the frustration. And she listened. And she's like, Jeremy, King Hezekiah, when the Assyrian army was coming for Jerusalem, he saw this. He stopped up the water outside the city so they didn't have easy access to water. He built the city walls more robustly. He got things ready in the city for the attack, the inevitable attack on Jerusalem. He prepared and did all he knew to do. And then he waited for the deliverance of God. So the Assyrian army came and, you know, they threatened and beat their chest. And there wasn't a lot for Hezekiah to do. I mean, he was just responding now to what was happening. There wasn't more to do. All he could do was wait, and he prayed. Mm-hmm. And then the deliverance of God came. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to that for us, mm-hmm. that we do all we can do, mm-hmm. in light of recognizing that we're not in total control,
yeah.
and that we rest in the goodness of our Father. And then when we've done all we can do, we don't get paranoid. We don't run around like frightened people. We don't become spasmodic. We do what we do, and then we just wait, and we pray, and we bend our knee to the God who actually is in control, wait for his deliverance.
So waiting is not apathy.
No, no.
Waiting is not sort of a sit on your hands and do nothing. Waiting involves action, but also action that is grounded in the recognition and realization that ultimately God is in control.
That's right. And that waiting is actively looking to the Father. Mm. When there's nothing else to do, when we're being acted upon, when coronavirus, you know, secludes us all in different, yeah. places, that we realize this is out of our hands. And we wait on the deliverance of God. We look to God. That is the waiting. That's the action, is looking to the Father, mm-hmm. and then holding still.
And being faithful to what he calls us to do.
That's right.
I mean, it does, yeah. involve doing, but...
But I also think sometimes the doing is just looking to the Father. Yeah. It's not actually, yeah. maybe physically doing anything other than being on our knees. I think there is a place for doing absolutely nothing except looking to God.
Yeah, the story of Abraham comes to mind when, you know, God promised that he's going to be a great nation, but then
right.
Sarah was not having any kids, which I can understand why he was puzzled by how this promise would be fulfilled.
That's right.
And when he actively tried to make it happen,
yeah.
Versus waiting on God's timing, he got in trouble.
Yeah. But. How to ruin relationships. 101.
One verse that came to mind just as I was reflecting on this last night was a verse in Galatians that is referencing the coming of Jesus. And the line there just simply says, when the time had fully come, God sent Jesus.
Yeah.
And there's this understanding that, well, the time hadn't fully come. Now, I don't understand sort of what made that point in history the time that was right for Jesus to come. Why wasn't it 500 years before? Why wasn't it 500 years later? You know, historically speaking, you can look back and say, well, it was perfect. God knew it. But there's a sense that it was out of anyone's control.
Right.
But God looked at it and said, no. When the time was just right,
yeah,
Jesus came. And I think for us, that's something we can take sort of comfort in.
Yeah.
Even as we're doing everything we can do, yet we wait on God for the right time.
Yeah. I think that's such a critical lesson for us all in our time, is to wait on the Lord.
Well, if I'd encourage you to check out Henry Nouwen. He's done a lot of, as I said at the beginning, a lot of writing sort of in the spiritual formation and the Christian spirituality genre that you could check out. I noted his book, The Return of the Prodigal, but if you Google him, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that he's written as well, and recommend that you do some reading in there if indeed you're drawn to that. Well, this has been another episode of Here's What I Think. I'm Matt Showalter.
And I'm Jeremy Miller. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.